the yearning for a strong man that is able to correct another of the secular problems that afflict societies in Latin America and that afflict political systems in the region, which is criminal violence.
Welcome to the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs, a completely student-run podcast at Johns Hopkins University. My name is Nicole Rivas, and I'm joined by my co-host, Gina Lim. As the 2022 electoral supercycle in Latin America continues, with key elections in Brazil and Colombia happening very soon, much is at stake for democracy in the region. Despite the robust electoral systems throughout the region, only a handful of countries qualify as full democracies. What accounts for some of these flaws? And what should be done to ensure more stable and sustainable democratic systems in Latin America? To answer these questions and more, we are joined by Dr. Kevin Casas Zamora. We hope you enjoy this episode of the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs.
Kevin Casas Zamora is the Secretary General of International Institution for Democracy and Electoral Assistance, or IDEA, and has a political and legal background with a law degree from the University of Costa Rica, Master's in Government from the University of Essex, and a PhD in Political Science from University of Oxford. Currently, he's also a Senior Fellow at the Inter-American Dialogue, and previously, he held roles such as Costa Rica's Second Vice President and Minister of National Planning, Secretary for Political Affairs at the Organization of American States, Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution, National Coordinator of the United Nations Development Program's Human Development Report. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hopkins Podcast of Foreign Affairs. Hello, and thank you so much for joining us on the Hopkins Podcast of Foreign Affairs. We shall get started just kind of on the topic of these challenges for democracy in Latin America. With the caveat that Latin America isn't a monolith, are there some connective tissue, shared history, or philosophy that we can see as a distinctly Latin American brand of democracy?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I would say that the most prominent feature, though I'm not sure if it's unique to Latin America, is the fact that the region is building democratic systems amidst a terribly high levels of inequality, the highest in the world. And I would say also the notion that Latin American countries are building democratic systems in places where the rule of law is nowhere near secure. And that creates a very troubling set of issues. I mean, the sequence in which democratic systems are built matters a lot. I mean, and just to paint here with a broad brush, democracies in the North Atlantic, say, you know, Western European democracies, but also the US and Canada and perhaps, you know, Australia and New Zealand, in all those places, they had rule of law, they had credible judicial institutions, they had fairly decent levels of social respect for the law before they had elections with universal suffrage. I mean, we in Latin America are building democratic systems the other way around, and therefore the likelihood that we're going to get a democratic systems rife with power abuses, rife with impunity, democratic systems where where fundamental rights are not adequately protected, the likelihood of all that is that much higher. So we end up with democratic systems that are highly flawed, highly imperfect, and as a result of that, highly prone to discontent and disaffection.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really hard to talk about democratization of Latin America without at least thinking in some ways about the legacies, colonization, and other historical factors that played into development of the area. How big of a part does this have on the development of this thinking or the democracy in Latin America as a whole?
It is important as the background and the context in which countries are striving to build democratic institutions. As I said, the single most distinctive feature of Latin American societies is enormously high levels of inequality. The notion that these societies are, they are ridden with privileges of different sort. This is almost certainly a legacy of a certain kind of colonial history, as is also another sadly distinctive feature of democracy in Latin America, which is corruption. And the strict separation between the public sphere and the private sphere, the notion that public resources are sacred and are entrusted to authorities for the public good, this is a notion that was alien to all culture for a long time. I mean, this intertwining of private money and public money, public interest and private interest, is something that has infused Latin American politics for the longest time. So some of the distinctive features of democracy in Latin America are most certainly the result of a certain historical path that the region traveled on for centuries.
Right. So, and with this historical context in mind, a lot of policymakers are concerned about this regional instability and, like you mentioned, the high levels of inequality and the sort of cyclical corruption in the region. And so I was wondering, to what extent is this narrative true of going from a seemingly endless cycle of violent authoritarian regimes masquerading as democracy, going through president after president, to maybe a few more years of stable forms of democracy? To what extent is this narrative true? And what accounts for this seemingly cyclical or pattern nature of Latin American regimes?
Well, the story is more complicated and is less bleak as described by your question. Let us not forget that over the past 40 years, give and take, the region has had a reasonably good democratic run. And we should never underestimate that. I mean, these are highly imperfect democracies, and in some cases, they are democracies no more, like in Venezuela or in Nicaragua. But those democracies, imperfect as they are much better than the authoritarian calamities that were there before. So, the region, at some points, has shown signs of grave political instability. I remember, back in the 90s, there was this Latin American disease of presidents all over the place seeing their terms shortened for different reasons and being overthrown, not by the military, but by different kinds of constitution-ordered processes. But that's no longer the case. So with all the political tension that we see in Latin America, and for all the imperfections of democratic systems, these are countries that, just to say one very important thing, have come to accept universally the notion that the only acceptable and legitimate way to access political power is through the ballot box. That's no small thing. I mean, this is a region that not long ago, power was defined either in the military barracks or in the mountain. So let's not be so dismissive of the progress that Latin America has done in terms of building democratic systems. These things take time. You know, for those that say that Latin America has made scant democratic progress over the past generation, well, we should remember that it took the United States 2 centuries to grant basic rights to the Afro-American population, and that it took Europe 9 centuries to move from a parliament of nobles to a parliament elected by universal suffrage. 9 centuries. So these things take time.
Yeah, I definitely understand how this time and struggles are definitely part of building a democratic system. Could you speak to us more on both A, how these struggles speak to the people's themselves perspective on democracy? And you've also mentioned countries that have entirely overhauled their system of democracy, like Venezuela and Nicaragua. Given that, is democracy even a favored system for the population in some of these areas?
No, they haven't overhauled their systems. They have shed democracy altogether. Let's be careful about the terms we use. There's not a democratic system anymore in Nicaragua or in Venezuela. I mean, these are not different kinds of democracy. These are straight up authoritarian systems.
Yeah, I definitely understand. Sorry for my misspeaking, but could you speak more on maybe the people's perspective on democracy through these struggles and this time process of building this democracy then?
Sure. I mean, look, it's this is not a linear process. I mean, it's a process that is bound to work in fits and starts. And of course, you know, one of the tensions in this very complicated process is the perception that democratic institutions are not doing enough to redress those secular ills that the region has acquired, you know, in the course of many centuries that we already mentioned. I mean, that democracies are not doing enough to redress inequalities, that democracies are not doing enough to regret secular problems of social exclusion. And one can understand where that comes from. I mean, it's a sentiment that I sympathize with. Yet, and this is very important not to lose sight of, even when it comes to fighting poverty and social exclusion, the region has made significant progress. If you take the, you know, figures, say, the Human Development Index, you know, human development levels in the region, for virtually every country in the region, with the exception of Venezuela, human development levels have gone up continuously for the past 30 plus years. When you look at poverty just before the pandemic struck, and we can talk about the impact of the pandemic, just before the pandemic struck, poverty in Latin America was 18 points lower than it had been in 1990. Extreme poverty was half what it was in the 1990s. And even inequality levels, terribly high, unacceptably high as they continue to be, they had gone down. Income inequality levels had gone down in virtually every country of the region. So and the explanation for this, I think, is important. My impression is that, you know, the area of the democratic construct where the region has made the greatest progress, no doubt, is elections. Latin America is good at organizing and holding credible, robust elections. And over time, this electoral side of democracy has allowed for the political participation of groups that were traditionally excluded from the political process. And over time, in turn, with a time lag, that has allowed for social outcomes to improve and social policies to improve. And that's exactly the way democracy is supposed to work. I mean, the more voices you add to the collective conversation, the more interest get reflected. Not quickly enough, and in a less than perfect way, but my impression is that it is the success of the electoral side of democracy in Latin America that has managed to improve social outcomes as well, albeit in an insufficient way and with a time lag.
Right. And so you mentioned these robust elections that Latin America has, and with Brazil's and other countries having a lot of significant presidential elections coming up. I was wondering if you could give us a brief background on Brazil specifically, Brazil being one of the largest democracies in the world. How do we understand President Bolsonaro and what you've been talking about? Could you give us a brief background on his presidency first, and how does he fit into this pattern?
Sure. I mean, President Bolsonaro is one of the several manifestations of a populist authoritarianism in Latin America. He's not the only one. I mean, they come in different varieties. And the particular strain represented by Bolsonaro links to some of the issues that we've been discussing. I mean, one of the yearnings among a sizable proportion of population in Latin America is the yearning for a strongman that is able to put an end to what is perceived as the chaotic workings of democracy. The yearning for a strongman that is able to correct another of the secular problems that afflict societies in Latin America and that afflict political systems in the region, which is criminal violence. So Bolsonaro was able to tap into that strain of public opinion. And he also rode a wave that was dramatically shaped by the corruption scandals of the previous left-wing government. Before Bolsonaro was in power, the left-wing Workers' Party had been in power for 16 years. And towards the end of the tenure of the Workers' Party, as you probably know, there was this enormous corruption scandal, that came to be known as Lava Jato, which was a ruse in which many of the political parties were involved to siphon off funds from the state-owned oil company, Petrobras, to misdirect those funds to very powerful construction companies and to the coffers of different political parties and different politicians. So this huge corruption scandal provided fertile ground in which a populist appeal against corruption, a populist appeal against the chaotic workings of democracy could be successful. And that's exactly what happened with President Bolsonaro. Of course, as very often happens in this kind of situation, the presumed cure was as bad as, if not worse, than the disease. And Bolsonaro has had a very troubled tenure, has been able to achieve very little, and has in some ways become a threat to democracy. What one also, one only needs to see the constant attacks, very much according to the populist playbook, that Bolsonaro is doing day in and day out against the very sophisticated, very competent electoral authorities in Brazil. I mean, already claiming that a fraud will be perpetrated against him without any evidence whatsoever. I mean, this is the kind of strident message that Bolsonaro rode on to power and clung on once he was in power and continues to peddle. Brazil, not simply because of Bolsonaro, but what also because of what happened before Bolsonaro that made possible his electoral victory, Brazil has suffered a very visible deterioration in a lot of very important democratic indicators. What is important to understand is that while democracy in Brazil has been backsliding, it has been backsliding from a rather high level. I mean, Brazilian democracy was performing rather well until maybe 10 years ago. I mean, it had made enormous strides since the democratic transition, and then it started to slide down. And it's undergoing this process of backsliding, and because it started out from a rather high level, it still counts as a functional, you know, mid-ranking democracy, but one nevertheless, you know, where the trends are not good.
Right. So, and I wanted to ask, because you sort of mentioned Bolsonaro attacking the legitimacy of this upcoming election. And it sort of reminds me, it echoes some of the weaknesses of the U.S. democracy and with attacks on the legitimacy of the 2020 election from Trump. And Trump also similarly sort of tapped into this political polarization that's been going on in some of these democracies in the region and in the continent. So I was wondering, to what extent does political polarization play into this instability and democratic backsliding?
I think it's a very important factor. And it's become endemic in democratic systems, pretty much everywhere. You know, I'm not sure that you can replicate the absurdly high levels of polarization that you see in the States, in other places, but you do see much more polarization now than used to be the case years ago. In Latin America, this is compounded by a very complicated problem of institutional design, which is that we have presidential systems, but we also have very fragmented party systems. I mean, two-party systems like the one you have in the U.S. are an oddity in Latin America these days. They used to be the norm, or they used to be more common anyway. And not anymore. Now what you have is highly atomized, fragmented party systems. And the practical implication of that is that presidents in Latin America are elected without a legislative majority. They tend to be very presidents that find it very difficult to enact their political agenda, the agenda, whatever it might have been that they were elected on, and that have to cobble coalitions together in Congress so as to get anything done. The problem is that when you have high levels of polarization cobbling together this variegated coalitions to get in order to get anything done becomes much more difficult. And by the way, I mean, one of the ways, and we've seen examples of this in Brazil, for instance, one of the ways in which you can go around that problem of building coalitions among different groups is by purchasing a legislative majority. So this kind of combination of atomized party systems and presidential systems provides an obvious incentive for corruption. This is the kind of problem that democratic systems in the region are grappling with. I mean, which is a combination of flaws in the institutional design and also the phenomena that are feeding into polarization everywhere, including the critical role of social media that has become really toxic in terms of creating a public atmosphere in which differences of opinion are magnified.
So you mentioned earlier about pandemic and how that might have effect in our conversation. Taking a look at more of now, the current issues, the COVID-19 pandemic is a significant test of democracy for many of these nations, including Brazil, which we were just talking about. So to what extent has the pandemic exposed the flaws of democracy and how it has forced to handle both the governments and the people to mend these flaws? Or maybe it hasn't. Maybe it has just reaffirmed the building blocks of democracy. Could you talk more about this?
Of course, of course. Look, I mean, the pandemic has been a very stern teacher for Latin America, not just for Latin America, but certainly in Latin America, in the sense that it has rendered evident with terrible eloquence the things that Latin America has done well in terms of building democratic institutions and the things that Latin America has done less well or very poorly when it comes to building democracy. As we were mentioning before, the pandemic has shown very clearly that Latin America can do elections and does them well. The list of countries that have held elections over the past 2 years, elections which were credible, robust, perceived as legitimate in some cases, even though they were defined by razor thin results. The list is long. I mean, we've had elections in Mexico, in the Dominican Republic, in Chile, in Peru. I mean, the list is long. So Latin America is doing well when it comes to elections. And as I said, arguably, this is the single most important achievement of the process of democratic consolidation in the region. At the same time, it is fairly clear, the pandemic has rendered clear that the region has done quite poorly when it comes to other aspects of the democratic construct. And I'll give you, you know, a couple of examples. I mean, the region has done very poorly when it comes to building robust government institutions capable of delivering public goods and services of high quality to citizens. And don't take my word for it. I mean, I'll give you some factoids. When the pandemic struck, Latin America had, on average, 2.1 hospital beds per 10,000 people. 2.1. The average for OECD countries, OECD being like the grouping of the most industrialized countries on Earth, the average for OECD countries was 4.7. And I'm not going to get, I mean, those are hospital beds in public health systems. I'm not going to go into intensive care units and more sophisticated things. I mean, the gap between the kinds of public services that Latin American governments provide and the kinds of public services and public goods that people expect is huge. It goes back to the question of insatisfaction with democracy in the region. And I'll give you another factoid. When the pandemic struck, there was only one country in the region, Chile, that was investing over 4% of the gross domestic product in public health. Only one in the whole region. All the others were below 4% of GDP. The average for the OECD countries is almost 7% of GDP. So that's how the pandemic found public health systems in Latin America. So it is no wonder that despite the fact that Latin America has about 8 or 9% of the global population, nearly a third of deaths from COVID-19 globally have been recorded in Latin America. So obviously, this is something where the region has not done well. The region has not done well when it comes to the robustness of the rule of law. Again, don't take my word for it. If you take the latest report from Latinobarometro, which is one of the big regional surveys, which is very useful to gauge public, you know, public political attitudes in the region. When you ask people whether they trust judicial institutions in Latin America, only 25% of Latin Americans say that they trust the judiciary. When you ask Latin Americans whether they think the law treats every citizen as equal, whether the law treats everybody as equals, 75% of the population say that they don't believe that that's true. When you ask people in Latin America whether they think that as a matter of course, the majority of people abide by the law in their everyday life, 84% of the population say no. So there you have it. I mean, in three data points, you have the parlous state of the rule of law in Latin America. So all those things have become increasingly evident in the course of the pandemic. The pandemic has been an extraordinarily useful device, a painful one, to render evident what the pending assignments are. And I hope that the region will heed this painful advice, gather during the pandemic, and act upon it. I don't see much appetite for that, to tell you the truth. I see one case, which is the Chilean case, in which for reasons unconnected to the pandemic, for reasons that started out before the pandemic, the country decided to call a constitutional convention, to convene a constitutional convention to renegotiate the social contract. Because of the huge social demonstrations in 2019 before the pandemic. Well, they are having this constitutional convention, and I hope that what emerges from the constitutional convention will amount to an example for the rest of the region in terms of what you need to do to renegotiate the social contract as a result of all the flaws that the pandemic has rendered evident in the political systems and in the general workings of society.
Right. And like you mentioned, Chile is one of the few countries in Latin America that has qualified as a full democracy, the others being Costa Rica and Uruguay. While the rest of them, like you said, have been categorized as flawed democracies. And this is according to the EIU Democracy Index in 2020. So I was wondering, considering your previous post as Costa Rica's vice president, what can other countries learn from, let's say, the Costa Rican model?
Well, the difficulty with that is that, as is always the case, I mean, whatever Costa Rica has achieved in terms of building a robust democratic system is bound and woven with a certain historical evolution that is almost impossible to replicate elsewhere. I think that there are a few things that are shown by the Costa Rican example that can be that can be useful. I mean, Costa Rica is a country that started investing in human development very early in the day. For instance, free public education, or rather, public education became free and universal in Costa Rica in the late 19th century, well before the rest of the region, and well before most states in the U.S. actually. So this is one of the things that Costa Rica got right, and that had a very visible effect in levels of inequality in the country. And so, you know, it's another crucial aspect in this story as to how Costa Rica managed to build credible democratic institutions is the judiciary. Generally speaking, not just in Costa Rica, but everywhere, I mean, the older I get, the more convinced I become that the independence of the judiciary is arguably the single most precise barometer of the quality of democracy writ large. And this is something that Costa Rica invested in quite heavily early in the day. And to this day, despite flaws, despite shortcomings, judicial institutions in Costa Rica continue to be comparatively robust and legitimate and endowed with credibility in a way that they aren't in most other Latin American countries. So it is I guess this goes back to the earlier discussion that we had about elections. You know, when we say that building credible elections is arguably the single most important achievement in the process of democratic consolidation in Latin America, it also has to be said that that's the easy part when it comes to building democratic systems. Crucial as it is, it's in a way the part of the process that offers instant gratification. The really difficult bit about building democratic institutions is the rule of law. You know, and there's this famous quip attributed to former British Prime Minister Gordon Brown when talking about these things. He said that, well, you know, what many developing countries should know is that when it comes to building the rule of law, the first 500 years are the hardest. Well, that's the way it works. I mean, these are generational changes that take a long time to bear fruit. And here, you know, I go back to the notion that despite the hiccups and despite the obvious flaws, one should not be dismissive about what the region has achieved over the past generation. It is grossly insufficient, but it's progress nonetheless when it comes to democracy.
And now let's take it up to more of kind of like projecting towards the future and more about this progress. We talked about the largest challenges and the struggles that Latin America has faced with its historical democracy. So what do you think are the next steps for ensuring a more sustainable and stable model in the region?
Well, I would say that two things that are, you know, really, really connected. I mean, I really hope that not just in Latin America, but everywhere, we come out of this pandemic with the notion that the quality of democratic governance matters. You know, that we come out of this pandemic knowing that the quality of institutions in a literal way saves lives. And, you know, it is those countries where institutions are endowed with trust, where institutions are able to respond in an effective way to social demands, particularly in the context of a huge crisis like the pandemic. Those are the countries that do well. And hence, It is imperative that we put the quality of democratic governance at the heart of public debates. And that means several things. That means that we should revisit issues of institutional design, like what I mentioned before about this very uneasy coexistence between presidential systems and fragmented party systems. That's essentially a problem of institutional design. I mean, that has to do with the basic constitutional architecture in our countries. That has to do with the electoral system. So that we revisit institutional design issues, on the one hand, that we take very seriously the question of a fiscal robustness of states in Latin America. I mean, that's a huge pending issue in the region. A revenue collected by states in Latin America, by governments in Latin America, is way below what it should be, and certainly way below what's needed to respond to social demands in terms of public goods and services. That means that we should really work on crafting fiscal pacts that address this fundamental issue, without which states will not be able to respond to social demands. That means that we should also take very seriously the issue of the quality of public management, the quality of public administration. That used to be seen as a, you know, this arcane issue, you know, on the margins of political discussions. Well, no, I mean, the quality of public management is essential for democracies to be able to respond and deliver. And finally, we need to take seriously the question of trust in institutions. And it's impossible to talk about rebuilding trust in institutions in Latin America if we don't take the question of corruption seriously and impunity derived from corruption. That's having a toxic effect, not just in Latin America, globally, but certainly in Latin America. So all those issues are what I would call a solid a democratic governance agenda. And I'm certainly hoping that as a result of the learning that has occurred in the course of the pandemic, that we will put those issues at the heart of public debates. If we don't work on the quality of democratic governance, it would be impossible to work on all the other things that we need to do for Latin America to live up to its promise.
Yeah, it was so great hearing both your thoughts on the past and current struggles, as well as steps towards future progress, Kevin. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
My pleasure and my honor. I hope that you'll find some interesting bits in this conversation. There are many interesting things happening when it comes to politics in Latin America.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs. We hope you enjoyed it. We would like to say thank you to the International Studies Program at Johns Hopkins University and the SNF Agora Institute at Johns Hopkins University for making this episode possible. Remember to follow us on social media at Hopkins POFA on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for the latest and greatest of Hopkins POFA content. Hit follow on Spotify, subscribe on iTunes, and leave a rating. We'll see you next time.